Any thoughts about Pentecost?
Very enjoyable.
Everybody looked real relaxed when they came back in.
Well, it was 1,000 years long.
Well, if there are no objections, I want to start the book of Ecclesiastes so that we finish it by the seventh day of the Feast of Tabernacles.
That's in October, right?
Well, I know, but or at least I don't have a very good success rate about finishing.
That's probably a realistic goal.
We've never studied Ecclesiastes in here, have we? Have we? Do you remember? Are you going to sit down or are you going to wander?
We start our time around here. One thing about Pentecost is you don't have to do a lot to have a great Pentecost.
Would you give these to Carolyn? Yeah. John, any response?
I agree with Gary. To be honest with you, your statement at the end of the day that this was the greatest Pentecost ever, I mean, I appreciate that. But there's something in me that says what will make the greatest Pentecost ever is not what we say, but how we live it and what we do and what we bring back with us and so forth. So.
Well, I didn't mean it was the greatest Pentecost in history. It was the greatest Pentecost that we've celebrated.
You understand my point.
Yeah.
You know, we get caught up in the moment, especially when we're off the block and we're out of our mechanisms and our places to be and everything. And it's really, really, really great when that happens. And so we get really, you know, this is cool.
All righty. Let's go to Ecclesiastes. This was started to be written about 940, 950 BC. It's hard for us to conceive of that, like Ruth, and written at the time of the judges and how that worked, because it was written by Solomon. It's probably a collection of things of his thoughts over a many year period. We don't really know. But Solomon was considered to be the wisest, certainly of the time, maybe of ever. And he was a king of Israel, and his fame went throughout the known world. There's still, people are still searching for the Solomon's treasure. And he wasn't, let's just read it. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Now, we think of the word vanity and we think it's egotism or something, or that you like to look in the mirror. But this word vanity here is the word that means empty, futile, without purpose. Now here, the wisest man, vanity of vanities, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Hey. Now there are seven mentions of the word vanity. And the ancients declared that this was the seven worlds which a man beholds, among many other things. At one year, man is like a king, seated in a canopied litter, fondled and kissed by all. At two and three, he's like a pig, sticking his hands in anything he finds, and he's insatiable. At 10, he's like a goat. He skips like a kid, and all he does is run and play. At 20, he's like a neighing horse ruled by passion. At 30, he's having married, he's like an ass. And then when he's raising the children, he grows brazen like a dog to supply their food and their wants. Then when he's old, he's bent like an ape. So those are the seven worlds that this Targumist defined. It says what has been said holds true in general. But for those versed in Torah, like David, now King David was old. Although he was old, he was still a king. The seven vanities also correspond to the 7 days of creation. Now, this one's interesting. Well, all of them are interesting. The first day, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, but Isaiah says, the heaven shall vanish away like smoke, and the earth shall wax old like a garment. And Peter says, it's going to melt, it's going to vaporize. The second day, let there be firmament, which means the heavens. But Isaiah also says, the firmament shall be rolled, or the heaven shall be rolled together like a scroll. On the third day, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together. But, Isaiah says, the Lord shall utterly destroy the sea. On the fourth day, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven. But, Isaiah says, the moon shall be confounded and the sun ashamed. The fifth day, let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures. But Zephaniah says, I will consume the fowls of the heaven and the fishes of the sea. In the sixth day, let us make man in our image. But Zephaniah says, I will cut off man from off the face of the earth. In the seventh day, and God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it. But everyone that profaneth the Sabbath, which is everyone, shall surely be put to death. We get in trouble when we give breath to the things that God says will be destroyed. Peace. And when Adam, you know the psalm, some of the psalms are supposed to be the psalms of David, but there were 10, alleged 10 writers of the psalms. And one of them was written supposedly by Adam, and that was the 92nd psalm. And it was written about the Sabbath, because the entire world was created for the Sabbath. We must come to the place where we understand that the Sabbath isn't a day, it's a life. It's the life of Christ. Something's going on. Who's not here? Who's got something to say? Don't wait for me to point you out. Just say, if you've got something going on, say it. Kevin? You? Ronnie? Well, you know, we're not here. We're bouncing off the ceiling, so. Maybe it's just my hearing. Doesn't anybody else feel it? We can just sit here and twiddle our thumbs.
Feel what?
If I have to explain it, you don't feel it. Is it you, Mr. Gary?
Probably. Really, it's not anything I can talk about right now. I mean, it's personal stuff.
Can you walk outside the door and leave it there and come back in?
That's what I've been doing.
I know you've been walking outside the door, but let's physically do it and see if that helps. What?
He's stretching.
Does somebody think this is weird? He's a new man. All right. I'd like you to have a homework assignment and read Psalm 92, the Sabbath Psalm that was allegedly the first Psalm ever written, according to all of the ancient Talmudic scholars. The words of the preacher, the son of David, the king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? One generation passeth away, and another generation cometh. The earth abideth forever, or forever here means as long as time lasts. You understand that? What? Now you're happy. What happened?
Well, this is pretty much right where I was, you know. What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun?
Okay. So something about you had a task that wasn't being accomplished, and now you've seen it empty. Okay. The sun also riseth, and the sun goeth down, and hasteth to his place where he arose. The wind goeth toward the south, and turneth about unto the north. It whirleth about continually. Where did that come from? Continually. Why does reading the book of Ecclesiastes always make me happy? Is it because I'm weird?
Maybe.
Well, those two aren't related.
Okay.
Strange comfort.
The wind goeth toward the south and turneth about unto the north. It whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again according to his circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, there they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with the seeing, nor the ear filled with the hearing. The thing that hath been is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done, and there is no new thing under the sun. Oh, no, we've got new stuff. No, you don't. There's nothing new under the sun. Just a regurgitation and rearrangement of vomit. Is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new? It hath been already of old time, which was before us. There is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things that are to come with those that shall come after. I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. And I gave my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under the sun. This is sore travail. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of men to be exercised, or better translated, to be humbled therewith. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Now, the word vexation of spirit, as you've heard me talk about many times, literally means chasing wind. It's not just empty, futile, vain, but it's the same as you chasing wind. Now, this all empty, all futile, all hopeless, all nothing, if you don't see that it's talking about your mind, then you will continue on that fruitless chasing of wind. And there you're not really just chasing wind, you're chasing imaginary wind. You're not really experiencing vanity, that it's something is vain, because you've recreated it so that it doesn't denigrate with time. In your mind, it remains incorruptible. You got it? That which is crooked cannot be made straight. That which is wanting cannot be numbered. In verse 13, where it says, this is sore travail, hath God given to the sons of men to be exercised or humbled therein. One rabbi related the verse to the prophets and the writings. For if Israel had been worthy, they would have read the Torah alone. The prophets and the writings are all rebukes. Then there's an interesting reference. There's a reference made to Numbers 32. Don't go there, but you can go there later. Where it says, behold, the place was a place for cattle. And the question is asked, what is the distance cattle wander while pasturing? And the answer was X cubits, which is about right around 15 to 17 miles is the distance of wandering, supposedly, in Israel. So that they have made a mitzvah or a law, a minor law, that pasture land was not less than 16 miles from the next community, so that cattle would not unlawfully devour produce of its neighbors. Now, there's something really big in that I don't get yet, I just thought I'd throw it out for you. Somebody else, one of you may get something out of it where I can't.
One of the things that occurs to me about this,
I've given my heart to seek, in verse 13.
Well, it's the sore travail hath God given to the sons of men to be exercised therewith. It's like every man is given his task or his job or whatever to do with all his heart or whatever, and then to see, not just to read it and say, well, it says it in the book, so that's so, but to be exercised in the certainty.
Right. Remember, there are... I believe this, and this isn't doctrine or anything, it's just what I believe. There are 24 courses of the priesthood. And those courses of the priesthood, and they, except for the high priest, those courses, and many times rotated among different people. Like the course of taking care of the altar of incense or the table of showbread. There was a course of priests that only did that kind of stuff. Then there was another course of priests and Levites who picked worms out of the wood. And another course that repaired I believe that every one of us has a false identity, that the evil one has corrupted these 24 courses of the priesthood, so that there is some function that you feel comfortable doing, after the flesh, but it's a corruption of what your course in the priesthood is. And so that's why it's imperative for all to push all the barriers, push everything as far as it'll take it, as far as you can go, so that you can find out who you are. I mean, how many, I know a handful of doctors who spent, inordinate amount of time going to medical school, going to through the residency, and they practiced medicine for a year or so and then quit and did something totally off the wall. It makes no sense, but I admire them, because the idea that you would not, and sometimes it happens, you all know it. You've all been there where you say, I don't do this anymore. But what do? We are like this brazen thing here. If you have a family and kids, and you've got to just keep on trudging. And so, why? Well, it seems to me that once you've reached a point where whatever it is you're doing becomes work, and that it isn't this free flow, then it seems to me that there has to be some kind of transaction within you if you're going to have any integrity. Because now you're really just eating vomit, because you know that which you're doing is just goofy, and it's just, but for whatever reason, you just keep on doing it. Does that communicate to anybody? I don't want anybody to do anything. I mean, just come to the end of it. That's why I'm so, happy with the kids, that they're able to go and, spend a year in Europe and go learn a different language and go to school in Switzerland, whatever it is, so that they can push all these things so that they don't have to be like their parents. Oh, if only I had done this, and if only I hadn't done that. Whiny crap of your life. Oh, I'm going to offend somebody now. Does that make sense? Why do you do what you don't want to do? Why do you do something that's a drudgery to you? It doesn't make any sense. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity and vexation of spirit. Verse 14. Again, this is the one that Harry remembers. May be likened to a man, an old man, sitting at a crossroad. Before him were two paths. This old man was Harry. One was even at the beginning, but thorns and briars and everything at the end. The other was thorns at the beginning, but smooth and even at the end. The thorns and the study of Torah and the Bible study, those are the thorns at the beginning, but then it's straight and even at the end, because you find out that He is the way and you don't try to do anything anymore. You're not trying to work it. Are you mad at me because I said this was you?
No, I'm thinking about earlier when it was kind of strange in here. Part of that was me. This morning.
What? When? What earlier?
Strange feeling when I took.
Oh.
When Gary took the bullet. You know, it was kind of like, here it is, it's Monday morning, having just spent a weekend at a lake, you know, sitting around talking, napping, walking, doing, eating, doing whatever the hell you want for all weekend. It's Monday morning. And I found that when I went out to walk this morning, that I really enjoy walking, but I was thinking about where I had to walk to and how far I had to go and how long it was going to take, and suddenly it became drudgery and it became onerous and it was just yucky. And I realized that, you know, sitting here thinking at the time, you said something was going on, that there's nothing, I don't think there's anything in the course of a day, any day, that I don't enjoy doing. But if I start thinking about the rest of today and tomorrow and next week, and I turn it into drudgery. So when you were saying, why would you do what's drudgery? My reaction to that is, all my life I have turned the good into drudgery. And it's just, that's just unbelievable. Well, that's what I do. I turn it into drudgery.
It's because you, and you're not alone, most people are like this. It's because you believe at the core of your being that you don't deserve joy. And that happens because some issues and conditions have happened and you're still giving breath to yourself. So in essence, to forgive yourself, the only way you can forgive self is to see self as dead. And that's why the life is in the blood. It's now it's his blood, his life. It's no longer, I mean, I've done so much stuff. If I had to start thinking about the crap I did, I would spend 50,000 lifetimes trying to make amends. I mean, it's got to be, I'm dead. I'm crucified with him. He lives. I die. His blood, the life is in the blood. It's his blood, not my blood. That's why I'm forgiven, because the sin is covered in his blood, because my blood is dead. My life is dead. But if I'm going to consider, and oh, wonder, poor me, and I shouldn't have done that, and I should have been nicer to my mommy, and I shouldn't have done an endless number of things, and every time my sister visits, I find out a whole bunch more endless things that I shouldn't have done. You got to find out. You got to say, for me to live is Christ, to die is gain. I am crucified. I'm dead. I'm gone. Now it's him. It's his life. It's his blood. Do you understand? There's nothing about you in here. Except vanity of vanities. All is vanity. All is empty. All is vexation of spirit. All is chasing wind. To him that worketh is the reward not reckoned of grace, but of debt. And the moment you feel debt, then there's no joy. It's so simple.
I just heard you say something. You're forgiven completely because you're dead.
Right. I've said that for 30 years. Sloppy agape in our minds and our little songs. Oh, we're forgiven by the blood of Jesus and he's cleansed us of all unrighteousness. Yeah, because we're dead.
Yeah.
Oh, but I want to go get delivered so my flesh is good. Huh, Ronnie? I want to go find a place where I can get fixed. The secret of life is to find out you're not fixable. Shut up, Ronnie.
I know that now.
Huh?
I know that now. Can be fixed. Can be fixed, can't be delivered.
Nothing to fix, nothing to deliver.
We're going to stop, but we're going to just get a hint at the one verse, because even the universe shows us. That which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. And the main thing they use for this, to describe this silly chase we're on, is the lunar year is 11 days less than the solar year. And so then the question that the rhetorical question they ask is, how many days and cycles and years will it take before the moon catches up with the sun? It can't. It's a different orbit. What your mind tells you, it cannot be done because you were created so that you would have images of things that most of them you can't do. And so you run around constantly making yourself feeling guilty. But it's like Harry's the classic. Harry's this Clyde here. Clyde makes lists, and we ask him to do something, and so it's, well, when do you want to do it? Okay, it should be done by, say, let's say next Monday. So Clyde automatically thinks that either, whether it's the date that I said or the date that he said, he thinks it's a date from God. And so God said it has to be done on Monday. So he murders everybody in his pathway who gets in the way of him meeting that agenda. But Harry is doing that for your benefit, because all of you do it, but he does it openly. So stop doing it. It's just stupid. We invented the damn date. You give your customers some imaginary date, and every sudden, everything in the universe comes upon meeting that date. It's just a stupid date you had invented. Well, what about blah, 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 blah? We got to do it before the market closes. It's another invention. Can you see how you apply and you create your own pressure? You create the goal that you can't meet. Because most of you got this, well, except everybody except Carolyn, you got this thing that says, you're not going to meet that. I don't care how hard you work. Carolyn seems to do it without any effort. It pisses me off to no end. She meets whatever, you know. Huh? We should kill her.
That's because she's so organized. It's disgusting.
Now, Pete, on the other hand, Pete is worse than Harry, but he doesn't know he is.
Which is bliss.
Like they say.
Hey, in defense,
is bliss.
Hey, now, in defense of Pete, sometimes he gets these
requests.
I know. Pete, would you mind doing this? And then 30 minutes later, when it's not done, somebody is chewing on Pete's ass.
Now, here's the thing that where the number 666 comes from. And it's still in this same verse. That which is wanting cannot be numbered. That which is crooked cannot be made straight. That which is man, and this is from the Talmud, and it's from all ancient literature, is 666666, because it can never reach seven. It can never be at rest. Seven is rest. Sabbath. That which is man is 6666 and can never be seven. Man striving can never attain to a standard. So when in the New Testament, when in Revelation it says, his number is 666 and his number is a number of man, it says a man, but it's any man. His number is 666, because no matter what it is you do, I don't care if you're president or Ross Perot or the richest man in the universe, you're going to always be at stress because you're trying to get to something you can't reach. The same as the way to see it is try to make the sun. Now, by now, the sun and the moon, the moon is like 5,000 years behind the sun. Or vice versa. You can't catch it. You can't reach. You can't attain to the thing that you think you want. And if you can't attain it, it's gonna be crap anyway, because we're going to see in a minute that all of the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is never full. So also is man. You think up new things and constantly think the next new one's going to give you life.
I always thought that, you know, other people were able to achieve their goals, and I never have.
I promise you, no one has ever achieved their goal.
Yeah.
Well, that's not true. You may achieve it for a minute, but then you've invented a new goal.
This is driving me crazy.
All right. That's the beginning of Ecclesiastes.
Pretty good start.
Huh?
Pretty good start.
Take a big gun.